T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We slip into our second hour, and we do it with the Cobra, Matt Maiocco. We got so much to talk about. What a weekend of football we got coming up. What a week of headlines that we have behind us to discuss. I mean, it's just something else. He is your CSN Bay Area 49er insider. He's our Cobra. Have you got your Chip Kelly t-shirt yet? I mean, are you ready, Matt? Are you ready for the dawn of a new era of credibility, or are we getting a little too excited a little too soon? I got to tell you, I like the hire. I do. And maybe I'm a selfish talk show host. I like the hire for selfish reasons. I also like it for football reasons. This guy knows football. Lost his way in Philadelphia. Second chance might do him good. What do you think?
Yeah, I think probably the best case scenario would have been if he had gone somewhere else, you know, if he'd been a coordinator or maybe even spent a year outside of it. But all things considered, where the 49ers were, the first thing we got to look at is, I mean, it's clearly an upgrade. And the 49ers weren't just bad. They were boring. They were irrelevant. And now they're not irrelevant. I think people are going to be paying attention, and it's going to be fun to talk about them. Whereas, you know, last year, after about 6 weeks, everybody was a broken record because it was just the same thing week after week after week. So Chip Kelly, he definitely brings a lot of pizzazz now to the 49ers, pizzazz that they've been lacking for a while.
Now,
and, I mean, certainly the results, you know, were there. The Jim Harbaugh era could not have been any better for the most part on the field. But, you know, that offense at times, it wasn't much to look at. And you know, I always think back to the 49ers of the 80s and 90s that it was an explosive, dynamic offense. And I think people are going to tune in just to see what the 49ers do offensively now.
Well, and we'll talk about how he'll hone this offense and what it might look like here in just a second. In terms of his getting hired, we know he talked first with the team. They then kicked the tires on several guys. Was he the original plan all along, or did they circle back to him after they realized they missed out on maybe someone else they may have made an offer to?
Honestly, I don't know. All I know is Sunday night, after they fired Jim Tomsula, from outside the building, the first name I heard was Chip Kelly. And I didn't really think too much of it then. Later, you know, this week, I started thinking back to, you know, Jim Tomsula and how, for the most part, everybody thought he was coming back, myself included. That was certainly reading the tea leaves. That was what I believed. And then something happened late that week. And maybe the thing that happened was that Chip Kelly became available. Now, I also know that as intriguing as Chip Kelly was from the beginning, and the word was that he was the best, quote-unquote, coach, the best coach that they interviewed during that time, there's still a lot of red flags and a lot of due diligence that had to take place just to figure out, I mean, what went wrong in Philadelphia, why it went wrong, how much to blame he was, and if this will be an issue in his next job. So just by that, you knew that they would take a little bit of time. Hugh Jackson, were they interested in him? I think there's no question they were interested in him, but I also believe, and it was proven, that the Cleveland Browns wanted him a heck of a lot more than the 49ers did. What I don't what's kind of difficult to separate then is, okay, why did they go after or talk to Tom Coughlin? Why did they talk again to Mike Shanahan after talking to him last year? Was it just to continue to cross the T's and
well,
dot
you know,
the I's?
Were they legitimately interviewing these guys? Were they being thorough for thorough's sake, thorough for PR's sake? Were they really curious? Were they not sold? You know, we'd like to know, but the truth is, you know, we'll never know because Chip Kelly is the hire. Let's talk about his assistants. Who do you think he's looking at as a defensive coordinator? We know that they brought him in to call the plays. Who would be an offensive coordinator ideal for him, knowing that that guy doesn't really coordinate the offense?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing would be, I think probably the offensive coordinator is probably slightly more than an entry-level coach who's going to be learning from Chip as much as he's going to be actually doing coaching. Here's the thing about Chip Kelly is that he doesn't have in his Rolodex, if Rolodexes are still around, a large number of coaches in his background that he can lean on. His staffs with the Eagles were very much kind of no-name types of coaches. And so I don't expect there to be a big-name hire that joins him on his staff. I understand he spoke with Eric Mangini, I'm assuming, about the defensive coordinator position. Chip, I believe, is heading back to New Hampshire this weekend. I don't know where that stands, but I have heard that there have been plenty of coaches who were with the 49ers staff in 2015 who have already cleared out their offices, and Eric Mangini isn't one of those guys. So that leads me to believe that Mangini is very much in the running to implement what he started to implement this year and hold on and possibly hold on to that defensive coordinator position. So I don't know that – I think that's the big hire because everything on the offensive side is going to be all about Chip Kelly.
They certainly need wide receivers. And, look, they need a quarterback until he finds one. I think there's no way you hire Chip Kelly to not at least see what he and Kaepernick can look like together for one season. Why do it? Why let Kaepernick go now that you got the one guy that might be able to unlock him or fix him or however you want to position what needs to be done with Colin? Do you think it's fait accompli, Kaepernick, opening week next year is your Niner starting quarterback?
I don't know if it's a starting quarterback, but I agree with you that they're going to sit down at some point, Colin Kaepernick and Chip Kelly, and they're going to talk things over, and they're going to probably get a read on each other. Now, the 49ers hold the cards in this one because Colin Kaepernick is signed through the 2020 season. And I from what I've understood, that Chip Kelly in the past has tried to make overtures to see if he could attain Colin Kaepernick for his team. Well, he has Colin Kaepernick for his team, and I can see the 49ers going through the offseason program, opening training camp with Colin Kaepernick, with Blaine Gabbert, and with a draft pick. Whether it's the number 7 overall pick, I kind of doubt it, but maybe a second, third, or fourth round pick that Kelly can kind of handpick and figure out that this is a guy that fits what I like, and now let's start grooming this guy. But I think it'll be a competition, and I fully expect Colin Kaepernick to be part of that competition.
You know, I think that maybe if you look to draft a quarterback, you do it in the later rounds. You definitely need one or two more targets before you need a third quarterback, you know, whether or not you're sold on those two bodies or not.
And also, Damon, I think you're right that they do need, you know, maybe a little bit more speed at the wideout position. But in my way of thinking, too, with the 49ers, the way they're constructed and the way Chip Kelly, we know that he likes to snap the ball every, you know, whatever, 15 seconds, you're going to need a lot of depth on the defense, too. And you're going to need pass rushers. And you can never have enough pass rushers because that defense is going to be out there maybe two-thirds of the time. So I think that's a good spot to look at with number 7 as well.
You know, we saw Carlos Hyde have success in Urban Meyer's read option, and we've seen him run well out of shotgun formations, which DeMarco Murray did not run very well. LeSean McCoy was sort of perfect for Chip Kelly, and why he decided to move on, well, that's part of the reason why he is now in San Francisco. So maybe we should all be happy that he decided that. If you're happy, Chip Kelly's here. Do you think the Carlos Hyde will be a DeMarco Murray issue or a LeSean McCoy success?
I think he has a better chance of being a success. I mean, I think I have a very high opinion of him as a running back if he can just stay healthy. And, I mean, the way he started off last season, 168 yards and a couple of touchdowns, including perhaps the 49ers' highlight play or one of their two highlight plays of the season on offense, I think he, I know he loves running in that kind of zone, spread formation. I think that's, it's tailor-made for him. So, that's one spot where they have to feel good going into next season with the top guy. But then you also want to get some guys behind him because you're going to want to share the load. You're not going to depend or put all your eggs in that basket of Carlos Hyde being the 16-game running back. Now, some of the guys that they had late in the season, they bring them back. But no, I think Carlos Hyde is pretty a pretty good fit for what Chip Kelly wants to do.
Is it too early to start stumping for a draft pick at seven? I like Laquon Treadwell out of Ole Miss.
Yeah, I mean, that's – no, I mean, that's – I mean, I think Chip Kelly is going to – he doesn't have say over personnel. He's not going to have the 53-man final say contractual – the final say with that. But Trent Baalke in the past has leaned on the head coach. If the head coach wants somebody, if the head coach stands on the table wanting a player, he's going to get him. And I don't think that'll be any different this year. I think that Chip Kelly will have a huge say in where they go, wide receiver or more likely wide receiver, right? I mean, that's what he likes. He's going to have a huge say in that number seven overall pick, and he's going to have probably the only say when it comes to the quarterback position.
Matt, let's wrap up with this, buddy. We actually got some football this weekend, and it should be fun. Do you think both NFC West teams are still alive by Monday? Does Seattle make it out of Carolina? Does Arizona hold serve against Green Bay?
I'm going to go with Carolina and Arizona in the NFC Championship game.
Okay.
I think the Seattle going to Minnesota in those conditions, I just can't believe that didn't take a lot out of them to win a game like that. So I think it's going to be very difficult for them to go to Carolina and win that game.
Always good to talk to you, man. Thanks so much. And, boy, we're getting closer and closer to a Super Bowl. Amazing. Really looking forward to being down around Media Row with you. This is gonna be nuts coming up in a couple weeks here, Matt. Are you ready for the nuts?
It'll be a lot of fun. Get ready for El Nino to make that playing field at Levi's Stadium a quagmire.
Sounds fun. I love the drive down there. You're the best, man. Thanks a lot, buddy.
All right, D. Bruce.
The Cobra. Mr. Matt Maiocco. Joining us here on 95.7 The Game. All right, if you're on hold, we're going to come back and get to you. 888-957-9570. We've also got our buddy Ethan Sherwood-Strauss coming up at 4:30. Kaepernick's contract. Everyone knows it's a weird, choppy, convoluted thing. Well, I'll give you the particulars, the details, like what it really costs to say goodbye, what it really costs to say hello. We'll give you Cap's contract details and why you just gotta give him a year with Chip Kelly. Just 1 year to see if it works, right? I mean, it'd be nuts. Stick around. This is the Damon Bruce Show.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. We're back with the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
So all of this was confirmed by John Clayton, who probably has more real numbers about NFL cap space than most NFL GMs do. Colin Kaepernick has a $61 million guaranteed in his contract, but the only guarantee is if there is a catastrophic career-ending injury. Otherwise, it's built on seasonal escalator clauses, if you will. The 49ers can cut him before April 1st and would only owe him the rest of his prorated signing bonus, which is less than $7.5 million. The 49ers would save $9.4 million against the upcoming cap if they cut him before April 1st. Now, many of you know the Niners got about $50 million in cap space. If they cut cap, their post-cutting cap space would be, you know, pretty big. They'd have an awful lot of money to play with. So if they keep him, his salary de-escalates $2 million each season unless he's named first or second team All-Pro or wins the NFC title game with 80% of the snaps played that season. His contract really is the ultimate how not to put a contract together for your quarterback contract. Colin Kaepernick's agent, they'll be teaching lessons. This will be studied in contract agent school someday. This is like one of the worst contracts of all time. Talk about worst contracts ever. When Master P was representing Ricky Williams, he's like, I run No Limit Records. I'd like to be your agent. All incentives kick in at 2,000 yards. Like, all you got to do is set the all-time rushing single season record, and then your incentives click in. Like, I mean, it was just insane. Anyway, Kaepernick is a guy that I know a lot of you have given up on. And it's easy to see some of Kaepernick's games and say, boy, this guy's cooked. I don't think there's anything left there. I think you're simplifying it a little too much. I think there's still a lot left there with a guy who was given a good coach that made him successful early. The league, you say, adjusted to him. Well, this league is adjusting to everything all the time, no matter what. That's what coaches do. They make adjustments to slow you down. There's always someone working as hard against you as you are working hard to get better. Nobody's a video game. Nobody's great all the time. And if you are, you know, congratulations. You've entered the Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, super duper, all-time status kind of club. And it's a tough club to get into. And everyone wants their quarterback to be instantly identified as in that club, is worthy of that club, and succeeds. It takes time. And Colin Kaepernick is a guy that I think was coached incorrectly. Can Chip Kelly coach him correctly? We've said over and over, every single coach thinks there's Spicoli leaning out of the car, looking at all the cinder blocks on it after it crashed in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Everybody wants to go Jeff Spicoli, lean out of the car, look at it, and turn back to their friend and go, I can fix it. That's what coaches do. Coaches look at broken players and they go, I can fix it. I think Chip Kelly looks at Colin Kaepernick and goes, Spicoli, big time. No shirt, no shoes, no dyes. He's looking at the guy he's probably had football sexual fantasies about. I mean, actual sexual fantasies. I'm talking like football sex. Like, oh, my God, the way that he kept that ball on that read option fake dive was amazing. He came around the corner, beautiful block, sprung him for 23 yards. Like football play calling porn. I guarantee you Chip Kelly is really intrigued, and there's no way you hire Chip Kelly to not have him work a year at least with a guy like Colin Kaepernick. Come on. Let's go to Malcolm in San Jose. How are you, Malcolm? Thanks for holding.
I'm doing well, Damien. I've been having you on your show.
What's going on?
I just want to get your take on something racism.
I'm sorry, your phone is terrible. Sorry, Malcolm. Bad connection. Michael in Napa. How are you, Michael?
Hey, how's it going, Damien?
Things are good.
Things are good. Hey, appreciate you having me. I just want to throw a random fact out there. 2010, you got the 49ers at 6-10. They fire the coach. They bring in a good, successful college coach, 13-3. What do you think the chances of us doing that next year?
Well, I think that Harbaugh got more out of talent because he had more talent than Mike Singletary knew what to do with where this team has seen its talent get gutted pretty good. You know, this is an offensive line that doesn't block well in the running game or the passing game. You got wide receivers who, outside of Torrey Smith, are league-wide slow. Your tight ends are the least electric, scary tight ends in the NFC. Carlos Hyde has been hurt. Who knows what he looks like once he's healthy again. The defense plays well at home, doesn't pack up and go on the road automatically like it used to, but clearly light years ahead of the offense in terms of game day production. Singletary didn't know what to do with the talent he actually had. Harbaugh did. I don't know how much talent Chip Kelly's actually going to have based on what we're looking at now, but he's got opportunities to add a ton of talent through the draft and, again, a lot of cap space to play with. If Trent Baalke stacks his cupboard right, hey, maybe things do go well. You know, here's the thing. I could see why it doesn't click with Colin. I could see why you've given up on him. I can see why you doubt that he has the mental capacity to see and read the field and all these things that make a raw quarterback into a talented, nuanced quarterback. I could see it fail, but can't you, in your mind's eye, anywhere see it succeed? If it's going to, isn't this the last guy, or let me put it another way, isn't this the most qualified coach to extract from whatever Kaepernick's skill set is that can win games in the NFL? Like, I'm interested. I really am. You tell me the well is dry, give it one more pump. Gesundheit, button vixen. 888-957-9570. Malcolm has a better connection from San Jose. Malcolm, what do you got?
Mr. Bruce, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, sounds much better.
Awesome. So I just wanted to get your take on the perceived criticism that Chip maybe treats players like commodities and not like people sometimes, and if you think that's going to be an issue or if you think that's a problem.
Well, if reality is an issue, then yeah, I could see it would be a problem for all involved, but Chip treats players like coaches should treat players. They are commodities. And the minute your resources have been tapped and exhausted, you'll be moved on from. That is the harsh reality of sports. While we're sitting here selling your jersey, selling your T-shirt, there is another guy whose job it is to look for your replacement at all times. There's not a single guy in the NFL whose replacement isn't being scouted while he's going to the Pro Bowl. That's what we're doing here. That's what this is all about. Complaining that players have become commodities would be like a stock trader complaining about all the arithmetic he needs to do to find out how rich he is. Well, that's what your job is. You buy and trade stocks. Professional teams look at players as stocks. They're looking to buy low and sell high. And how warm and fuzzy the whole thing is really doesn't matter. Under ideal scenarios, you want everyone to get along. You want everyone to be cool and professional and appreciative of the work that you do. But remember, the minute you are done in a team's eyes is the day you'll be cut. And not a lot of warm and fuzzies change that equation anymore. This is the Damon Bruce Show.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. We're back with the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Golden State Warriors got back to the winning side of the ledger. What do you know? After the embarrassing, just terrible loss to the Nuggets, which had us all questioning whether or not they even knew how to play basketball. They somehow figure out a way to win. All right, I'm being overly dramatic. We all know I didn't like Draymond Green being a healthy scratch. I understand why he was. Doesn't mean I have to like it. It cost them a game. They absolutely should have won. And in a year where you're looking to play for maybe a little history, I don't want you to, I don't want that to happen. I'm selfish. I want it all. I want a repeat. I want a title. I want another MVP. And I think I got a team that can do it. It's amazing that they've come this far without even having their head coach to talk about the Warriors and the rest of the NBA, which revolves around them. We're really happy to bring in Ethan Sherwood-Strauss from ESPN. He's an NBA writer, and it's always good to have him on the show. Ethan, thanks very much, man. Happy New Year. How you doing?
Happy New Year. Thanks for having me. I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
Doing very well. And, you know, it's amazing to see Draymond with a miraculous recovery from the injury, which just shut him down in Denver. And, you know, look, I'm being a little bit of a jackass over this. But, look, this is a team that can really flirt with history. Why rest a guy who isn't in the Tim Duncan, I've got 100,000 miles of tread worn off my tire mode? Do you think Draymond really needed it? He certainly didn't want it.
Yeah, it's funny. Just like Bill Parcells said that winning is a great deodorant, I suppose in this instance, losing is a great healer. And it just healed Draymond up very quickly. I'm on the other side of this. I believe in maintenance. I believe in trying to keep guys as healthy as possible, because maybe I would tilt more towards your side if the Spurs were worse, right? And I would say, go for the record. That's what you should be going for. You're head and shoulders above the league. But with how great they are and the way they preserve their bodies, I think the right move was to rest Draymond and to try to have that long view. I actually think, though, Damon, that you're more of the Luke Walton camp, and this is a philosophical difference between Kerr and Walton. I think Kerr is more of the philosophy of rest and preserve, and Walton, as he told me when I asked, is more of a Phil Jackson guy, which is play through injury, and right now you're seeing Kerr's influence with Draymond resting.
You know, some of the criticism that I hear is, I mean, you want to talk about first world problems when you're criticizing a team for being focused on winning too many regular season games. This is officially uncharted territory for Warrior fan problems here. But chasing the record by some says, well, maybe your eye's really not on the real prize, which is repeating. To me, repeating is a lot easier with home court. And Ethan, you might have to get close to the single season wins record to hold off San Antonio for home court.
That is a great point. I mean, San Antonio, like the Warriors, has not lost at home this year. They are pretty good. And there's a pretty marked difference between how they are at home and how they are away. We saw them lose that series against the Clippers, a series I think a lot of people thought was almost beneath them and just assumed they would win. Because they were the better team, but without home court, they actually lost in Game 7. So I agree with you, but I also think that you don't want to risk it. You don't want to risk something calamitous happening. And with someone like Draymond, he's an energy player, right? He's somebody who goes all out all the time. He plays through various maladies. He contacted Bob Myers and Steve Kerr at the shoot-around, I think before the Denver game, and said that he couldn't do it. And considering what he pushes himself through, I would certainly be receptive to that message. And I think they made the right call.
116-98 win over the Lakers last night. What'd you think of the receptions Kobe Bryant was given?
Man, you know what? I think it was fun for Jerry West, and that was about Jerry West. And if I was Jerry West, I certainly would like to revel in all the draft picks I had made as the greatest GM in basketball history. But I didn't quite understand it apart from that. I don't understand. I mean, what beyond some battles, as Kobe referenced when he was asked, between himself and Antoine Jameson, those historic battles everybody remembers, what memorable thing happened with Kobe Bryant in that building? I mean, was it the time Andrew Bynum shot a three-pointer? I really can't tell you. So it didn't make a tremendous amount of sense to me, and I kind of am a bit put off. It's not making me incredibly angry, but this idea that Kobe Bryant is having this farewell tour that we're not really seeing for somebody like KG, that we won't see for somebody like Tim Duncan, and as great as Kobe Bryant was, as popular as he was, I think it's kind of self-indulgent that he's making a season about him when he hasn't been great for a while, and I think it's a little bit absurd, but again, I thought it was a good video, and hey, Jerry West gets what he wants because he's great at what he does.
By the way, I think the world's misinterpreting this. All of his seasons have been about him. This is just the first one where he sucked.
Good point.
Ethan Sherwood-Strauss joining us here. You can follow him on Twitter, at Sherwood-Strauss. If you're not, you don't understand how fun it can be to dork out on everything that is new NBA numbers, new ways to look at this team. And I really think you are like the Warriors as a team are peaking best at what they do in a time frame that makes them perfect for the era they're playing in. And I think you are kind of like a media member who's like perfect for the time and era that he's covering, because as the game's evolving, the way we look at the game is evolving. Sabermetrics mean an awful lot to basketball now, more than ever before. And I'm wondering, and I thought about you when the Browns hired Paul DePodesta. Do you think that? Do you think that?
Hey, if I had a nickel for every time I heard that one, David.
Right? No, seriously. Do you think that while we continue to study the evolution of this game, we might even see a bold NBA move where they go outside of the basketball circle for a true number cruncher like DePodesta?
I could definitely see that happening. Basketball, it's such a small community. It's a little different from football and also baseball, where you just have more personnel. I think basketball is a very small world, so it's hard to crack it if you don't have the relationships. But it wouldn't shock me. You know, I think we have Tom Haverstraw as a writer at ESPN and is definitely deep in the numbers, and he started out writing about baseball, and it wouldn't shock me if then eventually somebody like that transitions to basketball and you just bypass the whole basketball thing. So I could see it happening. I would just be wary of it because we've seen certain experimentations not work out, most notably the ultra numerical experiment in Philadelphia currently with Sam Hinkie. So I could see it happening, but I'm not sure it would work is what I'm saying. I'm actually going rock-headed Neanderthal, old ways, basketball relationships matter, and going against you on this one.
Is there a single move that Bob Myers would consider right now? I mean, obviously, there's nobody in the first eight, you could say the first 10, that he would consider moving coming out of that locker room. Is there any reserve he's thinking of tinkering with? I mean, what would have to be on the other end of his I'm going to make a trade phone for him to even think about picking it up and ruining a team that's got incredible chemistry?
Yeah, he really just has to be pretending that he's working hard right now around the trade deadline, huh? Because I know in talking to him and talking to other people in preseason, they always want to beef up that reserve point guard or reserve shooting guard spot. But since then, I mean, we had the weird circumstance of Brandon Rush just suddenly resurrecting.
Yeah.
And really, who could possibly see that coming? I remember I wrote about it in Portland. He hit 4 3-pointers. He hit 3 3-pointers. In the whole season before that. So suddenly that solves a lot of their problems if he's going to keep playing this way. And it's one of those things where I wonder if it would have happened if not for Harrison Barnes getting hurt, because Rush's season didn't start that well. I just remember in the locker room pregame of the Clipper game, I'm just watching him down like a quart of French fries and starting to think, has he just given up? That might be reading too much into a quart of French fries. I don't know. But then Barnes goes down, and he finds his game and finds his confidence. And for that reason, I don't think that Bob Myers has a whole lot to do. You know, some people have floated the idea of Spates on the market because he hasn't been playing that well. But he's good for team morale, and you don't want to trade him at a moment where he's not playing as well. So I can't really foresee a move that Myers would risk.
No, I can't either. So I'm glad we're on the same page here. I'm thinking, like, who are the three most okay, tinker with upgrading and another team might be interested in? I got Rush, Ian Clark, and Mo Spates. And with the way that Spates is bouncing back here, with the way Rush is playing, like you just said, and I think Ian Clark's like officially too interesting to move on from at all. Like, I want to see that guy play more. We finally got a guy to watch when fourth quarters are out of reach in Ian Clark, right?
I would agree. He was a pest on defense. He always had a great three-point shot, even if it's a very low release point. It looks a little strange. It goes in a lot. You don't want him on the ball too much. You don't want him doing too much with the ball. But he's filled that role well, and he's actually had some moments, unlike pretty much everybody else on the team, he's had some moments of looking really good when Steph Curry isn't in the game. Usually when it comes to reserves, they kind of fall apart without Steph running things and orchestrating things. So I've been very impressed by what Ian Clark has done. And, hey, like Brandon Rush, it's not stuff he showed when he was playing for the Utah Jazz.
I got Warriors and Spurs on the top line, and they're the only two teams there. I got the Cavaliers on the second line all by themselves. They're not quite Warriors-Spurs. Oklahoma City Thunder would be on the line after that, and I'm always hesitant to put the Clippers there. So I'll ask you a Clipper question. Are they going to turn this season into the season where they circle the wagons and finally overachieve? Or will this be the season where they're correctly identified as the classic underachievers and a talented team that should be broken up?
I'm not even sure if they're talented enough to be regarded that way. In many ways, they had more stuff in the past, like when they had a young Eric Bledsoe who could become something. But they're so weak on the wing that, you know, the experiments they've done with Mamute and trying to get him to shoot shots and trying to get him to be an offensive presence, it's really difficult to win in the NBA when you just have nothing on the wings. When you're a wing stopper, the guy who guarded James Harden in the playoff series is J.J. Redick. So I think they're just bereft of enough talent to really do it, and combine that with how their dynamic between Blake Griffin and Chris Paul has never been optimal. It's better if you have both guys, but it says something that when one of them is out, the Clippers are fine. It's not exactly a perfect marriage there. So I don't think that they're going to overachieve. I think that the window for them is closed, and I think it's been closed in large part due to Doc Rivers' moves as a GM.
Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago. Do you think they come back from this three-gamer clean? It's going to be tough.
Yeah. You know what? They probably lose in Cleveland. Cleveland is spectacular at home. I believe they've only had one loss on the season. They definitely tuned the Warriors up during the regular season last year when they visited Cleveland. So you probably come away with a loss there. Those are just the odds, but I would give them two wins for the other part of the road trip. And I give myself even odds of still being alive after going into the Midwest in the winter. We'll have to look how that goes.
You'll be okay. Just a lot of cocoa, coffee, and you'll probably put on 10 pounds on the trip for insulation. It's just the way the Midwest feeds
A lot of hot toddies. I'll try that.
Indeed. Thank you, Ethan.
Thanks for having me.
Ethan Sherwood Strauss joining us here. A 95.7 The Game. I like that guy. We need to talk to him more often. By the way, along with the Warriors beating Kobe in his final appearance, there were some other big things, really big things, that happened in the NBA last night. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Come on back, take a call or two as well. Stay tuned. Much more coming up, including a little bit later on. Oh, yes, we're going to take it to the tweets here on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Damon, let me guarantee you right now that the Warriors will be playing the Bulls in the finals. Jimmy Butler is playing MVP level. He dropped 53 last night. See, you got to sign that text, and I would give you a little credit for it. But I'll tell you, Jimmy Butler is going off, absolutely going off right now. And that was a big part of a busy night in the NBA last night. Warriors beat the Lakers 116-98. They are nothing short of tied for the best record in NBA history through 40 games. The only other three teams to ever start 37-3 all went on to win the NBA title. The Bulls, the Lakers, and the faux Sixers. This is a great basketball team that we're watching. Curry last night, how about 8 of his 9 field goals come from downtown, and his one actual field goal is it wasn't a mama Chewbacca dunk, it was a baby Chewbacca dunk.
Raw.
Yeah, oh, there it is.
Raw. Baby Chewbacca.
It wasn't even a baby Chewbacca. It wasn't a mama Chewbacca. It was a baby Chewbacca. He hardly made the rim rattle. But Curry did throw it down, up high, down hard, and the shooting was phenomenal. And what do you know? The Warriors go on to win. Kobe, by the way, finished with 8 points on 4 of 15 shooting in his final Oracle appearance. It's his second worst field goal percentage on the road against the Warriors, and I believe the worst was the appearance from earlier this year, which I think when he walked out of that loss is when he started writing his I'm retiring poem, at least in his own mind. So, got the Warriors winning last night. That's the headline in the NBA. The Spurs remain perfect at home, and they do it against the Cavaliers, 99-95. They're 23-0 at home. That's tied for the 5th best home start in NBA history. It's their 18th double-digit winning streak of the Tim Duncan era. They've had 10 game winning streaks at least 18 different times since Tim Duncan has been there. And how much more is that? Well, the Lakers are second with 11.
They're at 18. Second place is 11. Mavericks are third with 10. The Spurs have now won 32 straight at home. For the Cavaliers, it's just the sixth time that they've lost a game with LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love all playing. All three of those guys healthy, by the way. The Cavaliers are 42-6 since last January. It's not bad. Then you got Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler with a career-high 53. It's the most points any Bull has scored since Michael Jordan. In the last two games without Derrick Rose, Butler scored 95 points. In the previous game, he broke Jordan's franchise record for points and a half with 42. Last night, 53, a career high. The 76ers, by the way, I remember you guys telling me this. Like, I don't know, Danny, do you have the game on NBATV.com or whatever? But Danny was like, dude, look at how the Sixers are putting it on the Bulls early. Yeah. The 76ers were up by 24 early on the Bulls and, of course, blew it. It is the biggest comeback in the NBA. Three other games from the NBA last night. Rudy Gay hits the go-ahead field goal with 0.9 seconds left in the fourth, giving the Kings a 103-101 win over the Utah Jazz. Chalmers hits a go-ahead field goal with 0.8 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Grizzlies beat the Pistons. And all the way in jolly old London town. It was a terrible London accent. I don't know what the hell happened. Across the pond in London, Raptors beat the Magic 106-103 in a second overtime game. So pip, pip, cheerio, and Victor Oladipo didn't get it done. Coach K in Vallejo. What's going on, Coach K? How are you?
Hey, Damon. Hey, I'm just taking it back over here to the Niner talk. And, you know, I think Trent has finally figured out that his success or his future for the Niners is really tied into Chip Kelly being successful. And I think, you know, if Chip goes down, I bet money that, you know, Trent's out. And, you know, it's okay that these guys have different, you know, mindsets. And, you know, what good company doesn't have, you know, people who disagree or have different ideas? You know, the best ideas come from, you know, situations like that. And as far as, you know, the quarterback situation, you know, I think that's not even an issue anymore. I think, you know, Cap will be back. I think, you know, Cap, I think we all realize Cap was not used correctly the last couple of years. You know, the analogy of putting the, you know, the round peg in a square hole.
Well, there's that. And you know, not only is a round peg not going to fit in a square hole, it doesn't happen at all behind an offensive line that isn't living up to its end of the bargain.
Exactly. And I think that's, and, you know, everybody talks about it. And I think their holes, you know, they need, I don't even think they need, like you said earlier, they don't need to pick up a quarterback in the first round or the second round. They need to go after their O-line. They really need to look at another inside linebacker to accompany Darrell Bowman. And then, you know, with Chip's, you know, offense, they really need to look at some guys, you know, whether it's free agency or in the draft, picking up some guys, you know, for pass rush. I don't even think a quarterback is even an issue this year. They have a lot of other deficiencies they need to look at first. But I think it's going to be a huge comeback year. You know, if we see Cap come back, and I would bet money he's going to be taking the snaps game one. I think this is going to be a huge year and huge numbers for Kaepernick.
Hey, appreciate it, Coach K. Thanks an awful lot. Let's wrap up the hour with Peter in Burlingame. What's up, Peter? Were you at the Warrior game last night?
Yeah, talking Kobe.
Yeah. Hello? Okay, thank you, Peter.
Shame. Shame.
He's like, we talking Kobe?
Shame.
I'm like, yeah, sure. And then nothing.
Maybe not. Just kidding.
I guess we're not talking Kobe. Not with him, anyway. You know, Kobe is a guy that the amount of victory lapping his final pathetic season that people are doing, and, you know, oh, it's so selfish. It's so, look, come on, man. They're going to have to drag you away from something you love that you're still making tons of cash at. They'll have to drag you away kicking and screaming too, right? They're going to have to drag me out of here. Seriously. Don Collins going to have to haul me out with, like, polar bears and Canadian Mounties. Whatever you need. You have to bring in Canadian hockey players to get me out of here. You have to drag me away. I don't begrudge Kobe wanting to hold on to his career as long as he can and squeeze every last drop of basketball out of himself, if that's the way he wants to end it. Other guys look at that as, you know, that you can attach nobility to that or not. The guy who walked away still at the peak of his game, that's the way to do it. Okay, for that guy, it's the way to do it. The other guy wants to keep going as long as he can.
He'll never get to do it again. Do you know what I mean? He'll never be who he was.
Right.
In that, you know, peak 10-year time, so.
He knows. That, to me, that is the finality of the Final Four that makes sports romantic. Like, the end is romantic and it's bittersweet. Whether you want it to be, it just is. Like, you know, when that senior walks off the court,
that's it.
It's over. Unless you're going to the NBA, you're never going to play a basketball game that the nation will lean forward to pay attention to the result ever again. And you might not even make it past a pickup game at the YMCA level of competition ever again. You know, a lot of guys extend their basketball playing days into Europe, and you can be paid well to do that and make a little bit of a career out of it and live very comfortably, handsomely. But we'll never follow your box score never again.
It's not the NBA.
We're not going to be paying attention to that. We really won't be. So the finality of it all. A lot of people never make it past that final game walking off your senior year of high school. That's where it ends for so many people. And when it's over, if that moment was poignant to you, and that was just your senior year of high school football or basketball or baseball, imagine what it is to be 19 years in. You've given your entire life to the game. I got respect for that. Hopefully you do, too. When we come on back, more of your calls. And, the Raiders aren't moving to Texas. That's next.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.